We'll get a chance also from Baloscha to start a little bit with Shlach. I want to talk to you about the Taz. The Taz in Yoredeya has a very famous principle, and that is that although the Rabbanon can institute any gzera, there is a limit to their ability. And if the Torah explicitly permits something, the Rabbanon don't have the power to prohibit it. And there's one halacha that seems to contradict that based on our parsha. And that is that the law is, and it's gzeira d'rabbanan, you're not allowed to take apart a shul, a synagogue, unless you already have another shul to replace the first one. That's called, in the Lashon of Chazal, Osur listom beis, listar beis kneses lifnei bone beis kneses acher. And it's all based on a sugya at the beginning of Bava Basra. The question is, if you look in the Midbar and the story of the Mishkan, HaKadosh Baruch Hu commands Bnei Yisrael to take apart the Mishkan. And in fact, they don't have another Mishkan at that point. They're going to build another Mishkan. But you're allowed to take apart a Mishkan, and the Torah commands you to do so. If that be the case, how can the Gemara establish a gzera that you're not allowed to take apart a synagogue until you have a second one to replace the first one, when we took apart the Mishkan and we were commanded to do so, even though we didn't build we're going to build it in a second place? Yeah.
I don't understand. I'm sorry. I don't understand the question. I mean, the Mishkan's made to be set up. It's still there. It's not a question of the shul.
Okay. Excellent, Joe. It's still there. I'm going to try to embellish that concept that you mentioned. It's still there. Meaning that even though we take apart the Mishkan, it really is still there.
There's another answer also.
Yeah, go ahead, David.
The other answer I heard many years ago on a similar related thing is that the Midbar is considered Makom Echad. The entire
Midbar. Oh. So I'm going to try to combine the two points that you make. The Torah says Al Pi Hashem Yachnu, the Al Pi Hashem Yisov. And the Gemara quotes this pasuk in Masechet Shabbos to ask the following question: one of the 39 melachos is soser. You're not allowed to take a building and demolish it, but the Gemara establishes that the violation of Melechah Soser is contingent on the fact that you intend to rebuild it, because otherwise it's pure makalkal, it's destructive. But if it's a stepping stone to rebuild it, that's called Soser Almanas Livnos, your intention is to rebuild, then and only then do you violate a Melechah through Soser. The Gemara then goes on to add another stipulation. Only if it's soser almanas livnos bimkomo, meaning that you're really replacing that same building because you're going to restructure it in that same place. So the Gemara says, wait a minute, all the malachas are derived from Mishkan, and yet in the case of the Mishkan, when they were soser, they had no intention of rebuilding it in the same place. On the contrary, the idea was to take apart the Mishkan and transport it to a different place. So how can you tell me that the Malach of Soser is only Almanas Livnos Bimkomo? It's in the case in the Mishkan itself was Almanas Livnos Shalo Bimkomo. So the Gemara answers, Al Pi Hashem Yachnu, the Al Pi Hashem Yiso. Since they would only take apart the Mishkan when they got the command to do so, when the Anani HaKavod started moving forward, therefore it's considered as if they were Soser Almanas Livnos Bimkomo, that in truth they were going to rebuild the Mishkan in the same exact place. Now, this Gemara doesn't make any sense. Okay, true that they would only take apart the Mishkan in order to reassemble it based on where Hashem would want them to. They took it apart when Hashem wanted it to, and when Hashem wanted them to establish it, but it was always in a different place. Why is that called Soser Almanas Livnos Bimkomo? And I think we derive a very fascinating conclusion from this, and Joe, you intimated this before, that it's not that we're really taking apart the Mishkan and rebuilding it somewhere else, Whereas David says, no, it's always in the same place. The Mishkan continues to be located in the same place, because where is the Mishkan? The Mishkan is always Al Pi Hashem. It doesn't have a fixed location. The location is wherever God tells us to assemble it and then reassemble it. It's always, so to speak, carried by Hashem. The Mishkan is carried by Hashem. And if that be the case, then what we're doing here in the case of the Mishkan is we're really fulfilling God's will and we get rewarded as such. And therefore, it's not that the Torah is allowing me to demolish the Mishkan as a synagogue, even though we haven't rebuilt another one. The Torah is really just taking this Mishkan. Hashem, so to speak, is carrying the Mishkan on his shoulders. And I'll give you a mashal. And this mashal I saw in Reb Chaim Shmulevitz. He writes, imagine a mother carrying a baby. Now she carries the baby and she relocates herself from place X to place Y to place Z. And if you ask me, where is the baby located? The answer is the baby is always located in the same exact place, namely in the arms of his mother. It's the mother that's carrying the baby. It's like the Gemara in Shabbos that says if you have an egos tzaf al gabi mayim or an egos bekli tzaf al gabi mayim, the egos is always located on the kli, even though the kli is being carried by the water from place to place. And here, I want to mention the pasuk, V'yasu li migdash v'shachanti b'socham. And there's a famous insight of Rav Chaim Volozhin, the Nefesh HaChaim, in Shar Aleph, and he points out that it doesn't say v'shachanti b'socho, that I will abide, I will reside in the Mishkan, but b'socham. And why the plural? And here, Reb Chaim Volozhin quotes a famous principle in the name of Rashi in Chumash Bereishis Perek Yud Zayin, who says that tzaddikim heim hamerkava shel hashchina. It's like the Shechina is always in the merkava. The merkava is the location of the Shechina. And who is the merkava, the Shechina? Who is, so to speak, the carriage that carries the Shechina? It's the tzaddikim. And therefore, Reb Chaim Volozhin says, "V'shachanti b'socho." In truth, my Shechina resides b'socho, in the tzaddik, in the merkava. If we make ourselves into a merkava, a home, so to speak, to host the Shechina, then that's exactly where Hashem is. V'shachanti b'socho. Our goal and our responsibility is to make ourselves, each and every one of us, a Merkava for Shechina, a kind of miniature Mishkan. But the problem is that God created man as a combination of Nefesh and Guf. Can man as a physical material being always be a Merkava for Shechina? Can he always be a place where the Shechina wants to reside? After all, man has to involve himself in a host of different physical activities. And at those moments, l'chora, he's disconnected from Shechina and from being a Mishkan. He cannot be a Merkava of Shechina. So what does it mean that man is a Merkava of Shechina? And here I want to share with you the insights of the Vilna Gaon. And the Chafetz Chaim, Zichrono Livracha, extended and embellished the Vilna Gaon. The Mishnah in Avos has a list of what's called Kinyanei Torah, meaning those methods by which a person can acquire Torah. And amongst them it says, Miut Schora, Miut Derech Eretz, Miut Tainuk. Says the Gaon, the Mishnah doesn't tell me no schora, no derech eretz, no tainuk. The Mishnah says miut. The Mishnah means to tell me that we have to have a system of priorities. We have to know what comes first and what is primary. It doesn't mean that we don't have schora. Of course we have schora. We're required to do schora. And the Gemara tells us, "Had hate behem derech eretz." But nevertheless, we have to understand that our goal is to set Torah as our primary aspiration in life. And what this means is that even when a person is involved in Schora, even when he's involved in Derech Eretz, even when he's involved in various Tanugim, he enjoys schmoozing with people, with his wife and with others, he enjoys going out on a holiday. Nevertheless, in his priority system, Torah is first. And therefore, that's called Miut Schora. Miut Derech Eretz, Miut Taina. Miut means, because I know what I'm after, I know what my primary goal is, I know that if I have the time, then surely I want to develop myself as a Talmud Chacham. And it's very interesting that the bracha that we recite on the study of Torah, Asher Kidshonu Mitzvosu V'Tzivanu Lilmo Torah. No. That's wrong. Asher Kidshonu Mitzvosu V'Tzivanu Lasok B'Torah. What's the difference between Lilmo Torah and Lasok B'Torah? And the answer is because the Bali Atosvis, the Re, in Brachos Daf Yud Aleph Amud Beis, asks the famous question, how could it be that we recite Birchas HaTorah once a day in the morning? We learn a little bit, you know, we learn a couple of psukim in Birchas Kohanim, and then we recite a Mishnah about Eilut Varm Shalem Shir with a Bryce about the Keren Kayemis Olman Ba, and fine. But then we go to work, and we come back, and we find time to learn. Or we take a break during lunch, and we have a lunch and learn, whatever it might be. We don't make another bracha. Why is it different than a classical birchas hamitzvah like sukkah, for example? You take a break from the sukkah, you come back, and you make another bracha on the sukkah. And the answer is because our bracha is not on limud Torah, it's on esek haTorah. Esek haTorah means that everything I do during the course of a day, all my occupation, whatever I'm preoccupied with, it's all integrated in one long limud Torah, which is called Esek HaTorah. If the bracha would have been Limud Torah on the Limud itself, then if I take a break from my Limud, that's called a Hesek HaDas, then for sure I would need a new bracha. It's like I leave the sukkah and I get involved in other things. But in the case of Torah, the bracha was established not on the act of Limud, but on Esek HaTorah. And the Chafetz Chaim, Zichrono Livracha, has a beautiful raya for this. He says, the Gemara Metzia, in Bav Metzia says, in Asochas HaPoelim, that if a poel is working, he's not allowed to take a break during his work hours in order to involve himself in his own pleasures, in his own achila, shesia, whatever it is. But it says that when he's moving from one telem to the other, at that point, he's allowed, I'm sorry, Kshaholech mitelem letelem, is even though he's not actively involved in work, because he's moving from one line, from what's it called, one furrow, one row to another, nevertheless, he has the same status as Osek b'molato shel balavais. And therefore he's not allowed to take a break. So what we see, says the Chafetz Chaim, is that anything that you do that's necessary to achieve your goal and your responsibility, working in the employment of your employer, all that is considered osek b'malachto. Therefore, says the Chafetz Chaim, when I go to work in order to make a living and support my family, so that I can go back and now dedicate myself to the study of Torah, all that is considered osek b'melechas haTorah. And even when a person eats, and a person rests, and a person needs a certain amount of enjoyment, all this is part of the perspective of esek haTorah. And he had another beautiful proof. The Gemara says in Masechet Shabbos that if you carry an object 4 amos in Rishus HaRabim without a break in the middle, then you chayev. But the Gemara says if you took a break in the middle of the 4 amos, you stopped, then even though you completed the Dalet Amos, you're not chayev. What if he was omeid lekatef? Lekatef means that he's putting the burden on his, squarely on his shoulders. He's moving it from place to place. Says the Gemara, in such a case, he's chayav. Because since the omeid lekatef is for the purpose of havara, we don't see it as a hefseg. He still is involved in a continuous act of havaras dalan amos. Says the Chafetz Chaim, hine, what you see is clear, that whatever you do for the sake of an ultimate goal, even though you're not actively and acutely involved in that activity, it's considered al pi din as if you were involved in that activity. And therefore a tzaddik who has his priorities straight and his goal is always for the sake of limud Torah and for the sake of Avodas Hashem, he is the Merkava of Shechina. No matter what he's doing, it's v'shachanti b'socho, which means in the HaKadosh Baruch Hu is shochein in every single person if he reaches that level of being a Merkava of Shechina. And that's why the Gemara tells us in Moi Katan that when the Malach HaMavis came to take the life of Rabbi Chiya, it was the Malach HaMavis was unable to take his life because he was constantly involved in Torah study. Frekta Chafetz Chaim, what do you mean he was constantly involved in Torah study? Give me a break. He didn't go to the washroom? But the answer is that when you go to the washroom, that's not considered taking a break. You're still involved in Torah study. That's not a break.
That's a problem.
Say it again?
That's going to the washroom, you're going to say it's involved? I mean, I understand everything else, right? We have the thing with David HaMelech, right? But with going to the washroom, you can...
Yes, and that's what I'm saying, Joe. When you come out of the washroom, you don't have to make another bracha on Talmud Torah. Why
right.
is that?
In the washroom itself, we have a whole Indian of not...
Right, yeah. The Chafetz Chaim discusses what you're allowed to think about in the bathroom, what you're not. Maybe you'll have to think about God and His greatness. But be that as it may, if your purpose in guaranteeing that your body is functioning properly is for this ultimate goal of having the strength to serve Hashem, we don't see it as an interruption. It's not a hefsek. And therefore, the Malach HaMavis could not find a moment in which Rabbi Chiya wasn't involved and dedicated in Esek HaTorah. Again, he wasn't doing Limud HaTorah in the bathroom, but he was Osek B'Torah. And I want to mention to you the Meiri has a very interesting point in his introduction to Masechta Yoma. The Gemara says, Kol ha'ochel v'shoseh b'tshi, if a man eats and drinks on the ninth of Tishrei, is malo av ha'kosuv ki'ilu his'ana b'tshi v'asiri, the Torah considers as if he fasted on both the ninth and the tenth day. How could it be? He's eating and drinking, and it's as if he was fasting. Says the Meiri, since he's eating and drinking in order to give himself the strength so he can fast on the tenth day, that also is considered a kiyum of tainis, and therefore it's as if he fasted on both days. And this is an amazing concept for us, because what it really means is that our eating could be considered learning. Because just like eating for the sake of fasting is considered fasting, then eating for the sake of learning is considered learning. If we only eat properly with the right intention, and our goal is set, namely we want to be able to serve Hashem, then there's no discontinuity, there's no breakdown or hefsek in our Talmud Torah and in our dedication to Avodas Hashem. Okay, Rabbos, I want to ask you the following question. New topic. How many chumashim are there? Every child knows that.
Six.
Six, okay. So that one I never heard.
No, seven.
Oh, okay, good. Excellent. Okay, that's a sheet of Rebbe. So let's go to the Gemara in Shabbos, Kuftes Zion. The Gemara records machlokas between Rabbi Shimon and Rebbe. This is Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says there are five chumashim. And Rebbe says no. The 85 letters that make up Vayehi Binsoa Ha'aron,
oh yeah, right,
is considered a chumish unto itself, even though it's only 85 letters. It's a sefer bifnei atzmo. Now, mind you, every sefer is separated from another sefer by four empty, how do you say it in English, shuros, lines, I guess, whatever the word is. So, according to Rav Shimon Gamliel, there are four lines after the first chumash, before the second, etc., etc. according to Rebbe, that Vayehi ben Tsoron is a chumash unto itself, then we would anticipate that there should be some separation of four lines, empty lines, between the first half of Bamidbar up to Vayehi ben Tsoron, and from after Vayehi ben Tsoron until the second half of Sefer Bamidbar, because it counts out according to Rebbe, there are really seven chumashim. There's Breishis, Shmos, Vayikra. There's the first half of Bamidbar up until Vayehi ben Tsoron. That's number four. Vayehi ben Tsoron is number five. The second half of Bamidbar is number six. And Dvarim is number seven. So if every separation requires four empty lines, what are we going to do in the case of Vayehi ben Tsoron according to Rebbe? And that's why Reb Shimon Gamliel rejected Rebbe. So the Gemara answers, somebody else saw you, that there were those, what we call the Nunim Afuchim, that would separate Vayehi ben Tsoron from what came before it and what comes after it. Vayehi ben Tsoron is blocked off by these bookmarks. Not bookmarks, what's the word?
Bookends.
Bookends, okay, fine. So now the Gemara asks the question, why is Vayehi ben Tsoron wedged in here in the middle of nowhere? It doesn't belong here. So the Gemara says, according to Rav Shimon Gamliel, this is a really strong kasha, maybe even according to Rebbe, but certainly according to Rav Shimon Gamliel, because Rav Shimon Gamliel sees it as part and parcel of the flow of one book called Bamidbar. Why is it there? It doesn't seem to be relevant at all. And the Gemara gives the following answer, La hafzik bein peronius le peronius. And the Mepharshim say that peronius means chet in this case. Chet that incurs upon, that engenders a punishment. Oh. One of the various peronius. So the Gemara says, I understand that after Vayehi ben Tsoron, we have the chet of the misonanim, the complainers, followed by the chet of the misavim of the kivros hatav. But what chet came before Vayehi ben Tsoron? And the Gemara answers, it says, Vayisu ne'ahar. And the Gemara says that when it says that Vayisu mehar Hashem, Shesaru mehar Hashem. What does that mean? So the Ramban in his commentary on Sefer on Chumash Baloscha says, quoting a Medrash, Ketinok haboreach mibeis hasef shayusasim usmeichim v'chashish u'shem HaKadosh Baruch Hu yavilem od mitzvahs. They were so happy to leave the Har Hashem, and they were afraid that maybe they would get more mitzvahs. That's what it says in the Ramban. So therefore the Ramban says there had to be a wedge in the parasha between the first chet of Saru Me'ar Hashem and the chet that followed with the Misonanim and after that the Misavim. Otherwise the Ramban says it would have been a chazakah of three continuous sins, and who knows what would have happened to Klal Yisrael. Terrible thing. In any event, I want to put this on the side for a minute to understand and appreciate what this is all about. But first, I want to tell you a story. And this story is so typical. We have days of holiness on the calendar, and we just experienced from the Erev Pesach until till after Shavuos a number of very holy days. We started with Pesach, which is 7 or 8 days, and then we had the days of Sfira, culminating with Chag HaShavuos a day or two. And yet, where are we? In truth, if we want to be honest with ourselves, having passed through all these holy days, have we really been impacted by, are we taking anything with us as we go forward? And if we cynically would say that the answer is no, then what's the point here? In other words, we're not really achieving anything. And in yeshivas, this is so common, where a yeshiva student will come to his Rosh Yeshiva to complain, and he'll say, Rebbe, I'm learning, I'm trying to learn, and yet I don't feel anything. You know, I don't feel that I've been uplifted by it. Where are those, you know, highs? Spiritual highs. So I want to tell you a story that they tell about the Baal Shem Tov. You know, any story of the Baal Shem Tov requires a certain, shall we say, literary, you know, license. You know, you always have to... Now, this story is told by one of the early, shall we say, movements of Hasidus that dates it back, that traces its history back to the, you know, to the original Talmidim of the Baal Shem, and that's called the Ritzina Hasidim. Okay, fine. So he says the following. The Baal Shem would travel from his hometown to far off areas or shtetlach with horse and carriage, and he had what we call a balagola. And very often what would happen was that there was what we call kfitzas haderech, meaning the horses would carry the carriage much faster than was possible based on the natural law of the universe, and they would quickly arrive at the place, the destination. The Baal Shem Tov would get out of the carriage, he would go in and meet whoever he had to meet, go back in the carriage, and before you could snap it, they were back in at home where they started from. Now, at some point, the Balagola decided to sell the horses because they were getting on in age, and he bought new horses. And these new horses, to replace the original, were very happy. Again, this is a Baal Shem Tov story. Very happy to serve the great tzaddik. And they would bring these horses to the to the area where they fed the horses. I don't know, what's that called in English? I don't know.
Drink horse for the trough, but you can't make them drink.
Right. Okay. And in any event, on Motzi Shabbos, it was time, after they, you know, filled themselves up, the horses, during the course of Shabbos, to tie them back onto the carriage. And it was time for the Balagola to carry the Baal Shem Tov with these horses all the way there. Now, what they did was they would stop on the way at a certain, at various inns, in order to let the Baal Shem Tov take a rest and get something to eat. And now they went very quickly through the first inn, they got to the second inn, they got to the third inn, and the animals realized that they didn't feel any ayifut, they didn't feel tired. And here's what he says. I'm going to read to you a paragraph here from Rabbi Yisrael Mirujin. He says, "Hichlitu shekfi anira susei atzadik. It must be that the horses of a tzadik misalim bidarga. They go up a higher level. The dinam kanoshim. And ma baalem enom soadim bchol tachano elamide arba v'chamesh achsanios olis alibam v'liglom." Seifel Mashke, just like the tzaddik himself, he can go for a long period of time from inn to inn, even after five stops. He doesn't even have to eat. So too, the horses don't have to eat. Okay, fine. Now, sof, yitamu madari b'nei odvi akiru tam yayin sof, avol hine ovru chamesh v'sheish achsanios v'lo otzu. He says that now, on this particular occasion, they pass through five and six inns, and there was no stopping. So normally they would have stopped every once in a while to allow the horses to eat and to drink, but this time they continued. And they finally arrived at the destination. The Baal Shem Tov gets out of the carriage. He has his meeting, gets back into the carriage. And now they're on their way back. And on the way back, they didn't get tired on the way back, even though, you know, biologically they had to eat and drink. But they didn't stop anywhere. And then they began to understand that they were converted into tzaddikim and into malachim, and they were very happy. Then they get back home to the town of the Baal Shem, Mezibuch, and what happens there? The Balagola takes off the reins, brings them to the place where they eat, and all of a sudden, the animals attack the barley and eat it ferociously. And they understood that they're not malachim and they're not angels. They're not even bnei adam. At the end of the day, they are horses. That's all they are. And the bottom line of this story is that, you know, you could do whatever you want to do and go through every uplifting and inspiring experience, but nevertheless, you still remain the same person that you were. And this brings us back to the question of the Talmud. And there was a story about a Talmud who read about a certain tzaddik that he fasted for 40 days, and afterwards he went up to Shamayim and he had some sort of meeting with God. So the Talmud decided he's going to try the same trick. So he fasted for 40 days, and guess what? Nothing happened. He didn't go up to Shamayim. So he came to complain to the tzaddik, you know, why am I different than you? And the answer is that you think that just because you fast for 40 days is going to have such an impact on you that you're going to be changed. And there's no guarantee. Every person has to realize that no matter what inspiring experiences he undergoes, and even if he passed through Pesach and Shavuos and the 50 days of Sfiras HaOmer, and it looks like nothing changed, the answer is that there were moments of inspiration. And therefore, you know what? Even if you're not aware of any great change, even though you don't think that you are impacted, but nevertheless, you should know that it makes an impact. Moshe Rabbeinu was up on the mountain. He didn't eat for 40 days and 40 nights. So does that mean that a person is guaranteed that he's going to be like Moshe Rabbeinu, who went up to Shamayim to receive the Torah? There's no guarantee. And the answer is that, of course, we have to go through and expose ourselves to every possible experience that could uplift us. But we have to realize that it's not necessarily going to change us. We're not going to be able to see and sense an immediate change. We don't become malachim overnight. And the Torah here with the Parsha Vayehi Ben Soha Aron is telling us, Kedei lahafzik bein peronius leperonius. As the Ramban says, if you take out that parsha, then there's a chazaka of three continuous chatoim. We need the inspiration of Vayehi Ben Soha Aron. We need that experience of Kedei lahafzik bein peronius leperonius. Even though you'll argue, well, after the experience of Vayehi Ben Soha Aron, we went back and we sinned again. But nevertheless, we have been changed. Otherwise, Chas v'Shalom, HaKadosh Baruch Hu would give up on us. So if during Pesach, we sort of fly up to Shamayim, we have a spiritual experience, and if we finally land after Chag HaShavuos, but during that journey, we have had many inspirations, and all those impacts and all those experiences combined together during the course of a person's life to guarantee that he's making progress. We have to have periods of time which unfortunately are down, you know, we're not on the level, but then on the same time, we have to have hefsekim of Vayehi Ben Soha Ha'aron. And they make an impression. Sometimes we don't feel that impression because we go back into our down state in which we are spiritually, shall we say, depressed. But Chas v'Shalom to say that it didn't have an impact on us. And this idea of Vayisu Mehar Hashem, which, as we said in the name of the Ramban, quoting the Medrash, that they were afraid that they'll get more mitzvahs, and they wanted to leave Har Hashem. And the question is obvious: HaKadosh Baruch Hu commanded them to leave Har Hashem. Vayasa Moshe Yisrael miYamsuf. The pasuk says back in Yamsuf that Hashem told them when to go. And here the pasuk also says that the Anani HaKavod moved forward. So they didn't have any choice in the matter. Why are they getting punished? And why are they getting condemned for doing what they had to do? Joe?
Yeah.
Because their attitude.
Correct. It's a question of attitude. And I was thinking, you know, on Yom Kippur, we say, Al-Chet Shechatan Al-Fanecha Ba'onis. That certain sins were compelled upon us. Now, if they were compelled upon us, we have a principle that onus is like a is afkas hamaisa, we call it, meaning we're not responsible for things that were done by onus. Why are we saying al chayt? But the answer is, I think, and it's very fundamental, even when a person is compelled to do something, nevertheless, what's their attitude? Are they happy about it? You know, the bell rings and the children are out there. Wow, we're free now. What's the attitude of a person who gets called out of a meeting because the family needs him? You know, if he really doesn't want to be in that meeting and it's just imposed upon him, then he's lucky. But if, on the other hand, he has a positive attitude and he has to leave, he wants to be there, but mitigating circumstances beyond his control, he has to leave, then he has a whole different feeling, a whole different attitude towards leaving. And that's the question of Klal Yisrael. You know, there's a famous story about the Jew who gets called into the Paritz, and they're having a discussion, and then the Paritz takes out a bottle of wine, obviously non-kosher wine. And he takes two glasses, and he pours a half a glass for himself and a half a glass for the Jew. So the Jew turns to the Paritz, and he continues the discussion, but he doesn't drink the wine. So the Paritz keeps pushing him, you know, I poured you wine, please drink it. And the Jew doesn't pay any attention. And the Paritz is beginning to get a little bit hot under the collar. So the Jew says, I can't drink the wine. You know, it's not kosher wine. So the Paritz is now fuming. He says, religion is good for the church, but, you know, now I mean business. We're drinking wine together here. And at that point, the Paritz pulls out a revolver and puts it on the table. And the Jew turns to him with a smile. He says, my honor, your honor, please, can you fill up the glass? You know, now that I'm allowed to drink it, let me drink a whole glass of wine. It's pikuach nefesh. So the question is, al-chay chakaton ul-fanecha ba'ones. And the truth is that our attitude towards a makom Torah, and Har Sinai was the place where we received the Torah, and now after the Torah was given, Moshe Rabbeinu was teaching Torah to Klal Yisrael for about 11 months at that same spot. Now it's time to leave. Are we packing our bags with happiness, with joy? Ketinok haboreach mibeis ha-sefer. But sometimes HaKadosh Baruch Hu spares us from sin because we really don't want to sin. And then we know that Hashem is really there to protect us. There's a school of Musar called the Navarika movement of Musar. You've heard of it. So they used to give a mashal in Navarik. They used to say that when a ben yeshiva goes onto a carriage that takes him to yeshiva, what's he thinking about? And what's the balagola thinking about? And what are the horses thinking about? The ben yeshiva is thinking, I can't wait to get to yeshiva so that I can grow and steig. The Bala Gola is thinking, well, I can't wait to get this so that I can get paid for my work and I can support my family. The horses, on the other hand, are thinking, I can't wait to get there because I know they're going to feed me there. And the Navarticus used to use this as a mashal to say that what a person's madrega is going to impact on what his aspirations are and what he longs for. If he's a great person, then he has high aspirations, noble aspirations. A Ben Torah is aspiring to a life of Torah. The Bala Gola, on the other hand, okay, his aspiration is to be able to support his family. And the horses are on the lowest level. All they're thinking about is the bag of barley that they can eat. And the Chafetz Chaim used to tell us that at the time of the revolution, when the Tsar was locked up, incarcerated in jail, and he was really starving in jail, the newspapers came to they came to see what situation he was in and how he was literally, you know, in a state of collapse, and they were very happy about this because they belonged to the revolution. And then they asked the Tsar if he had any last requests, and he said he would like to ask for 2 potatoes per day in the cell. You know, that's all he could think about. It all depends on your situation. The Chazon Ish was once asked by someone, a Talmud, who felt that he was suffering from a taivas achila. You know, he had a tremendous desire to enjoy his food. And he wanted to know if the Chazon Ish had an etzah, you know, how to avoid this problem of taivas achila, overcome this issue, this challenge. So the Chafetz Chaim said to him, look, I can't give you any recommendation, but I can tell you when the Ketzos HaChoshen ate his food, he was thinking about Torah, because Torah was a lot sweeter and tastier for the Ketzos HaChoshen than the food that he was eating. And the Rebbe of Gur says on the pasuk, "Vayomer Hashem al Moshe, hineni mamtir lachem lechem min hashamayim, v'yotza ham l'loktov dvarayom biyoma l'mana nesenu hayelich b'torasim lo." And the Gemara says on this pasuk in Yuma that when you tasted the man, you could taste any taste that you wanted to enjoy. And therefore, if you had in mind that you're going to eat bread, then you would have to make a hamotzi lechem in aretz. And people could have all things in mind. The Ketzos, he didn't dedicate himself to these kind of ideas, you know, what can I think about, how much can I enjoy my food. Today we have a gadol, I don't know if you've heard of Rav Steinman, they say that he subsists on these little capsules of like pills that have energy. You know, he's not interested in anything but Torah. And if we get back to the pasuk by man, the pasuk says leman anasenu, the man itself is a test. Hayelech b'torasi imlo. Hayelech b'torasi means, what am I interested in? Am I interested in the enjoyment of the man and the pleasures therein, or am I interested in Torah? And this brings us back to our first idea that we started with, that all our eating and all our drinking is only a preparation for the Torah. And therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was very harsh with the Dor HaMidbar when they said, Mi achilenu basar, or zachanu es hadaga. That's all they were thinking about was the food that they ate, and it was denied to them. Is Vayichar af Hashem mi'od, ubi'enei Moshe ra. The chet of the Mis'avim was considered very harsh, because where was the Dor Dea? You know, what are they interested in? Is all their focus is on basar and daga? That's not very good. And you know that Chazal say that the man fell in 3 different ways. Some of the man would fall for the tzaddikim very close to the ohel. They didn't have to go far out. For the beinanim, it would fall a little bit further. They had to go to the Ketzei HaMachne. And then for the Rishoyim, they had to go gar very, very far. And it's very possible that although this Gemara has to be understood literally, Ein Mikra Yotzev De Pshuto, But there's a hidden idea over here, a deeper idea. And what is that idea? That it really depends upon what your, you know, what your aspirations are. Those who have aspirations to serve Hashem, they don't have to waste time getting the man. The man is just there so that they can function and they can continue to subsist, and therefore it fell in front of their oil. There were other people who couldn't dedicate themselves, you know, totally to learning and to Avodas Hashem. So maybe they would put in a half a day of learning, so it would take them a half a day to gather the man. And there were others who didn't learn at all, you know, so they had to dedicate the entire day to gather in the man. And it didn't make any sense. The pasuk says, Ze arba'im shana Hashem olkech imach lo chasarta davar. U'me'achash lo chasarnu davar. Ech kimu ba midbar mitzvah tzedakah. The first want to know that if they had everything that they needed, all of Klal Yisrael during the 40 years in the midbar, how are they fulfilling? How did they fulfill the mitzvah of tzedakah? And perhaps the answer is that when you tasted the man, you could taste anything that you wanted to taste in it, but you had to think about something and some taste. So for example, if somebody could only think about cheese, that's all he knew about. So that's all he would think about is cheese, and he would taste cheese. But if he enjoyed herring, he could think about herring. And that was even better. And you could go on and on and on. Maybe the aniyim were not exposed to the more enjoyable foods of life, and therefore you would have to give them that opportunity through tzedakah to somehow taste those pleasures. And the truth is that the Chofetz Chaim was asked once, what happens if a person doesn't have anything in mind when he eats the man? What taste does he taste? If he just chews up the man and swallows it without any thought whatsoever. And the Chofetz Chaim answers, I don't know exactly the answer to this question, but he said he believes that someone who didn't think anything didn't taste anything at all. It was simply, you know, tasteless. And he says that the Misodinim complained, Nafsha katsa b'lechem haklokel. Why did they complain about the man? And the answer is, because these were Jews who, on a spiritual level, they had no aspirations whatsoever, and therefore they didn't have anything more than a simple, shall we say, boring kind of experience, and they would call it lechem haklokel. And I just want to conclude the shiur by reading to you one interesting paragraph here from the Sefer Vigadita that I mentioned to you before. He says, Moshe Rabbeinu manchil haTorah. Moshe Rabbeinu gives us the Torah b'zchuso yorad haman. The Gemara says in Tainis that because of Moshe Rabbeinu we got the man. Yesh hagbola bein Torah min haShamayim lebein lechem min haShamayim. We find a certain corresponding parallel between Torah that comes from Shemayim and the man that comes from Shemayim. The Ramban, back in Parshas, Bishalach says that the man is Ziv HaShechina and is Gashem. It somehow, the Shechina becomes a certain physical substance. And that's why the man is called Kitzapiches B'Dvash, because Dvash is always a mashal for Torah, for something spiritual. And just like in man, you can taste any taste that you want, so too in Torah, when you study the Torah, you can study anything and enjoy anything that you want. You want to learn Pshat, you want to learn Drush, you want to learn Musa, you want to learn Remez, you want to learn Sod, you want to learn Pilpul, and Chiluk, and Lamdus, and Halach, and Agadita. And yet sometimes you meet a student who's studying Torah, and all the Talmidim around him are getting very involved, and there's a lively discussion, what we call Rischa Doraisa, and people are yelling at each other, and he sits there and he's dreaming. He doesn't have any taste in his learning. The Mishnah says, in Avos Ein Tov Ela Torah. So why isn't he feeling the sweetness of the Torah? And the answer is because he's just chewing the Torah as if he was forced to do so. He has no desire to taste and to enjoy the pleasure, the tainug of Torah. And unfortunately for such a student, like someone who eats the man and has nothing in mind, and he tastes nothing, so too this person who studies Torah and he doesn't have that fire within him to want to enjoy the Torah, to want to learn Torah with a tainug, with a pleasure, unfortunately he remains cold to Torah. He's there in the Beis Medrash physically, but his mind is elsewhere. He's just dreaming. If they thought about bread, they would make a motzilach minaretz, and then they'd have to bench. If they thought about ice cream, they would make a shakal.
I was thinking the famous story with the Chafetz Chaim, right? That they used to put the cookies and milk out by him. He had, when he was later on in life, and there would be a bacher who would sit there with him just to make sure he was okay. And he usually never touched the cookies. So the guy started eating the cookies. And one time he actually went for a cookie, and he saw that they were all gone. And he said, "What happened to the cookies?" And the kid said, "Maybe the Chafetz Chaim ate them." He says, "If I ate it, I could have forgotten, but I wouldn't have forgotten making a bracha." So maybe if they had a different bracha, it depends what they're eating the mud, which bracha they wanted to say.
The ikar is not the eating, but the bracha that you make on the eating.
That's right.